Welcome to Windows into Eternity with Almeen. This hour you will receive powerful revelations of a world where mystery and miracles are commonplace. Here's your host, Almeen.
We're back again, and we're ready to share with you today an hour of questions and answers, and we hope that you'll enjoy it. We always take a lot of trouble to get the questions from our listeners to the forefront, if we possibly can. And so, welcome, my beloved Light family. Nice to be with you again. And we have with us today Rogier Chaudet, and he's been helping a lot lately with these shows, which makes my life a little easier and gives you a little more variety in the shows, and also gives an opportunity for you to get your questions to us on the Twitter pages that we have. So, Rogier, if you can give me a little update of what you want us to talk about, and we'll just start right in.
All right. Well, first of all, it's maybe a bit of a peculiar place to start, but I've got a message here from Hannah in Ireland, and she says she's been dealing with an inflamed right ear that apparently is not really going away, and she says, I've tried everything except a visit to the doctor, and because, you know, heal thyself. But I thought that was kind of interesting, like, what does that mean, an inflamed right ear?
Well, an inflamed right ear, now, see, this is a fascinating question, because there was a mirror imaging going on between right and left brain. So the left side of our body was corresponding to right brain stimulus, or impulses. So we had the right brain governing the left brain governing the right. Under normal circumstances, this is the case where we had this, the message was, if it's on the right side of the body, that it's feminine. It possibly still is that, but I ought to just ask the mother. She says it has been kept that way so that the body can speak to you in a language you understand. So, in other words, right now, our left brain governs our left side of our body. Our right brain, the right side of the body. This is the reality behind the appearances. However, it's still going to speak to us if we are not aware of that in a language that we understand. So the right ear is masculine in the message that it's trying to give. And it is either saying the following. Now, Hannah is a wonderful oracle in Ireland, and I would imagine that if she's saying this to us, there's something cosmically that needs to be understood. The right ear is the male that is not hearing, or it is the masculine that is abusive and we don't want to hear. So it's either the masculine isn't hearing, or the masculine from the external, if you will, is not what we want to be listening to. So that is something, and it's interesting because we just did a pre-record on a show before, and Rogier was asking me why there is this gap, this lag, between his asking me a question and my answering it. And, you know, I was trying to explain to him that it's extremely nerve-wracking when you're having a conversation with him, plus I'm very aware of the listeners, and I need to define terms and so on so everybody understands, but I'm hearing Mother speak to me at the same time, and there is another thing happening. The pre-record we just did, there were several laws of existence being placed into the, let's just say, the Book of Life, but the Book of Life is actually an obsolete term. Into the intent of the infinite. The infinite's intent is putting it into life. That's maybe the best way to say it. For years now, the infinite speaks in the infinite's language, and I've had to repeat it in English to get it firmly in the denser parts of existence. So I'm repeating after Mother in my head in English as she's speaking things of intent to change the laws based on the questions that came in. And it just is the day for it, because this is the day that you had that song this morning, Ruchir, about seeing the infinite the way, you know, there was a song in your head and we deduced that it is about seeing the infinite as something ordinary when it isn't. And then we were dealing with that. So it was the day to fix those things. Hence the questions came on that specific day. But so I'm speaking it after Mother, and I'm listening to Mother, and I'm listening to you, and I'm keeping our audience in mind. So if there's a little lag time here and there, my brothers and sisters, I'm pretty sure you're not going to get this on any other show, and just please bear with us, but that is why that has been happening. So now yet again we come back to communication gaps, because there's a gap in between communication. So let me simply ask Mother what is going on with this issue of the communication gaps between the masculine and the feminine, or the masculine is not hearing the feminine, or the feminine doesn't want to hear the masculine. So that would be the answer. And Hannah, I'm pretty sure that you're creating a situation to give us this answer, and that it's not for yourself. Let me ask. Mishpach Tefkanash Uyaskaya Eshkiasta Bispaku Inech Vyaka Unesh Kiapakna Avach Kiusai Nishpakiahna Kiasku Ashkayavasa. Okay, Mother is saying that the masculine is the red color. We spoke about living in a cosmos after we exited the dream. That is in white light. When we were in the dream until very recently in October, November of 2008, we exited the dream. And for the first time, we're no longer made from some dream substance being therefore unreal. We are made from the infinite's being itself. We discussed the fact that in the dream, we were in a state of blue light. And as we exited, and if you go back to the previous program and the one before, you will see that the two-thirds went into a state of sleep so that the one-third could experience the dream. And we explained exactly how that happened last week, or the week before, actually 2 weeks ago. And we came out and we didn't have the orange and the yellow until it awakened. Then it became that which lives in white light, which is like an ascended master. But the red is the masculine. And we were overpolarized in the feminine, in the dream state, in blue. And then the yellow is neutral. So Mother is now saying, remember that the red is masculine. Remember also that the frequencies carried by the red are of lower frequency. In other words, he is speaking with a deeper bass voice. Nishbach kuskayech nesa ishkayesuchna ava. And the feminine frequencies of the blue that is still, of course, part of creation, part of the infinite's being, are feminine and they're a higher frequency. These are not synchronized. The feminine and the masculine have a lag time between their communication. And any lag time, my brothers and sisters, whenever we deal with what I call the two-step, One thing happens, another thing then occurs. It's not exponential and immediate. In other words, if the male speaks and then there's a lag before the feminine answers, or vice versa, that creates linear time because it creates a pause in between them. And from Ruchir saying, why do you have these gaps in between answering me? And I'm saying, wait a minute, I'm hearing so much else that we have to deduce that this is not synchronized. So Mother is now speaking about this. Ishbach kunes keche. I aya enechkayevas uch nehesh. Pasku che. Ichkia na use. If ba kine ichkia. Ishokonoye shasai. Skama ushkute enech. Mother is saying that it needs to be synchronized, that there is a delay before the masculine is hearing the feminine, because the feminine is quicker than the masculine when it comes to tone. And so that has to be synchronized this day. So my brothers and sisters, so that I don't try and do five things at once, if I may, I wish to just have Mother speak the laws of intent in, and then I'll put it in English. And then you can hear what I'm doing with Mother, and I don't have to have these little silences. Skashkir tanaf baunech, askayecheya kya, uhkunihikna baukunesh. At no time ever shall there be an inability of the masculine to hear exponentially all at once, all tones at once. At no time shall there be a difference in the ability of the feminine to see the masculine colors immediately and exponentially. Tone is empathic, color is telepathic. They are immediate and at once. The empathic communication and the telepathic communication need to be synchronized, that it takes place immediately. Nishkahbai kieta uvyeh kahuishka nasva bi uchayinaska aje ich makyakutu inishveskere ich kuinerkeva. This is also the case of those high frequencies and light that come from beyond the levels at which life is living within individuated cosmic form. That it also be immediately, empathically and telepathically communicated. Let it be the intent of the infinite, that all light, no matter what range of the spectrum or frequency, that can be interpreted immediately. In this way, the mother speaks and we hear. And the infinite masculine provides us with light and we can see. They are irrevocably joined together as one. So, my brothers and sisters, we have just a 2 minute little break here. But for those of you that were not able to join us last week, it was said that we would be able to see the mother and the father, which are joined together in one androgynous being, among us only when we can interpret ranges of light that lie beyond that in which we're living. And we spoke about the fact that white light is not just white light. There are multiple ranges of white. We are in white light that has three primary colors. When you go beyond the ascended mastery level of humanity to the God level, you get a white light that has seven primary colors. And then when you go beyond that, you have one that has 12 primary colors. So those are the primary colors. So we're in that mathematical sequence of higher life that we've discussed many times before on the show of 3, 7, 12, 20, 33, 54, 72, and 96. So, Ruchir, let's take a quick commercial break and then we'll come right back.
The Gift of the Unicorns is now available from Almeen. The magical book answers the question, do mystical creatures like the winged horse Pegasus, mermaids, and giants truly exist? What is their roles, and how can they be called upon for assistance? In their own words, the unicorns reveal where they went during the ages of darkness, their heroism in preserving purity and innocence, their golden shoes, and the secret mission they undertook for the mother of all creation. To receive your copy of this amazing book of sacred secrets, The Gift of the Unicorns, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016 today. The world of mysticism has yet another reason to rejoice. Almeen has authored another manuscript of profound knowledge. It's entitled, Opening the Doors of Heaven, Revelations of the Mysteries of Isis. Through a time travel tunnel linking Ireland and Egypt, Isis has sent a small group of masters to prepare for the day when the mysteries would once again be released to the world to restore balance and enhance life. They established the Order of the White Rose to guard the sacred objects and the secrets of Isis. In an unprecedented event heralding the advent of a time of light, these mysteries are released for the very first time. Packed with truly thought-provoking information, this book is bound to have an indelible impression on not only the reader, but on global New Age philosophy. To reserve your copy of this groundbreaking work, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016.
We're now in our second quarter, Andrew here. I'm going to turn the time over to you here so that you can decide what you want us to tackle.
Well, what kind of struck me as peculiar when you were talking about this, the metaphysics of this body language, that you said, well, now the right ear, because, you know, it indicates something different technically than what it did before, now that the hemispheres are the right side around, right?
Yes.
But I find it kind of strange that if you don't know of this, that it will still be indicating what it previously indicated. Because I always thought that this language was very much like form follows function, or function follows form, and that there's nothing arbitrary about it. But here it seems like, oh, it, depending on your knowledge, it could indicate the masculine, or it could indicate the feminine. But if that's so easy, then we could also just say, well, our left pinky toe could also indicate the same phenomena. I mean, you see my point?
Not entirely.
Well, it seems kind of arbitrary that even though the left ear now refers to the feminine, that it could also refer to the masculine.
Yes, but Ruchir, arbitrary, the part I didn't understand is the use of arbitrary, because it's not that it's arbitrary, it's that it's individualized. And it's a very good question that you're asking. But see, let's say you live in Slovenia, like we've got some great, wonderful Belvaspata masters in Slovenia that are part of the Order of the White Rose. Let's say you live in Slovenia, and the language there is uses the word rabbit as being silly. You know, just sort of silly, ignore that person, he's just a rabbit. Let's say they have that in their language vernacular. Normally, the rabbit means speed. It means that there's something that needs to be quickly done. in the night, I dreamt of a rabbit, and I dreamt that something needed to be, very quickly, needed to be lengthened. So, because the rabbit and something had to be lengthened in the dream. For me, the rabbit means the old Toltec symbols. But if I was in a country that had as an idiom that a rabbit is something silly, then it might give an entirely different impression to me. The language is speaking in a language you will understand. Like, for instance, red-handed. If you're caught red-handed, in the English language, it is an expression everyone knows, and you might manifest a red hand to tell yourself. Or, you know, red hand might mean you're going to catch somebody red-handed. But somebody in German might have no idea what that's speaking of, and so they would not manifest that.
Okay, so
if you're aware
that
the change... If you're aware the change happened, sorry, if you're aware the change happened, then it will speak to you in the new way. If you're not aware of it, it will speak to you in the old way.
Okay, so I get that, but then there's still a difference between, I think, or it would seem to me, between language of environment, wherein, like, red-handed, or the language of the body itself, insofar as I would have always have assumed the indications of the body to be more like a sigil and not like a symbol, whereas the examples that you're giving there are much more like language that's used as a symbol, wherein, well, many things can refer to this one thing, whereas a sigil, you know, it conveys also, it is what it means. And I would have always have thought that the body and the aspects of the body would be more communicating like a sigil rather than like a symbol.
There is really no inside and outside, so that the environmental symbols are but an extended body, and they all are actually indicating what needs to be looked at one way or the other. See, why I'm hesitant in how I define it is that yesterday work was done, the day before work was done, the day before that work was done, to try and eliminate the mirrors of our environment as being negative. Hannah has a sore ear. She's done that because something had to be changed in the cosmos. Now her ear will get better, because this is something she contracted to say at the right moment. And, you know, I ask Mother, and yes, this is the moment, and it gets put in. And in her contribution, great blessings come. But she no longer needs the sore ear. It's the same with everybody. It's our goal that it's no longer unpleasant. It's indicating what is rather than what isn't.
All right. Now, I guess really...
But it's the same, right? I'm sorry to interrupt, because I just suddenly remembered I really didn't address your question very well. The language of the body and the language of the extended body, which is the environment, should be the same language.
Okay, but then if I... Yeah, but you... Isn't there some sort of inherent compulsive logic to having, say, the ears refer to listening or something like that?
Yes, there is. I mean, there is a universal language that ears go to listening. But if you're familiar with the right ear being a masculine, then your right ear is going to be the one that hurts if you have to say something about the masculine.
Okay, now I don't know if this is what, sort of what I'm asking about is relevant at all, but it seems like there's more of an inner urgency to ears being associated with listening than, say, you know, getting red on your hand has to do with being caught red-handed. Like, the latter seems to be more, you know, flimsy and sort of contingent.
It's a more refined language. There's a basic language, and then there is a more refined language that pertains to your life experiences and your social environment. And that's where idioms and things can come in.
Okay. Now, sort of where I was coming from with my question is because for the past days, we've been talking previously about body types and specifically relating to red and blue and yellow light. And I was thinking about that, and I thought, well, you know, maybe this idea of a body type is also such just another construct. But then I thought, well, when we look at sort of someone's physical features and like their face, and you tend to think, well, that's just kind of like how they look and that's that. But then yesterday I was thinking, well, what if someone's features, like, for example, just how they look in their face, is also a code or a language that is being conveyed, and it's not just something like a mask, but really sort of indicates something from, you know, the inner or the unseen, or, I mean, I know we don't have an inner anymore, but do you know what I mean?
It used to be genetic programming to a very large extent. But that programming has been removed, because all things that have been dictating life to us, like astrology as an external program, genetics as an external program, the matrices of the cosmos, the grids that tell species exactly how they should behave, all of those things we have done away with. It's been going on month after month after month to get rid of what Mother called artificial intelligence, programs that have been telling us. And one of these programs has been that our mirrors have mirrored things backwards. Yesterday it was put into the laws of existence that it no longer mirrors backwards. And it's not a mirror. It's an expression of life. So, of the infinite intent, and so are we. So it's one with us because of that. But, you know, these programs of the features, a lot of it was genetic. And it's absolutely true that with those programs gone, if we wish our face to change, we can certainly have a change. We've had two of the masters, I recently wrote about this on the blog. We had two of the masters, the Nagual Michel, and we had the wonderful master Jan in Ohio. Both of them, for a time period, decided they were going to close the mirrors in their house and not look at them. And in fact, Michelle would put contact paper over the mirrors, and as she saw things within, she would write it on that contact paper, that symbolical that the within has become her mirror. And she says that in the beginning, it's rather disconcerting, because it's almost like without the mirror, you've disappeared. And Jan and she both have said the exact same thing, phenomenal freedom. And just the sense of deep peace and inner knowingness when you finally get over those first disconcerting days that you experience from not looking in the mirror. And I asked Jan not to do that, because I told her she could completely reform any part that she wishes if she doesn't look in the mirror. And Rogier, you know, if you want to take a moment and explain to our listeners, because you have seen me, because he's, of course, our wonderful video technician and producer of all the YouTube movies and so on. And there are days that he couldn't film me because people wouldn't recognize me, because my face was changing so dramatically as I was going through changes within me. So I've several times redone my face in different ways. And Rogier, could you explain that to them? Because it really takes a separate witness to be able to see that. My face is the same.
There isn't really much to explain there, but I mean, for example, if you look on YouTube and the first video that we did on you on Lemuria was Secrets of Lemuria, it's called, and I was actually kind of hesitant to put that one up, because your face is like in between, it's like sort of shifting while, you know, we're in the middle of that. So I feel it's totally not representative of the way that you look, but we sort of just went with it anyway, and it's up there. But I think that you don't even need to have too much of a discerning eye that you can see that you really look different on that.
And see, if we even look at photos of me, I know what, a year ago, 2 years ago, again, the face is not, it looks, I don't know, it just, perhaps you can say what the differences are. It just simply doesn't look remotely like what I look like now. But Mother renewed my body along the way. And she renewed the face and just completely different.
And then you, besides that, you have, besides the sort of the morphing that goes on occasionally, you also sort of have, I mean, it can really be discerned on footage, at least by me, if you sort of where you're being filmed, but yet you're not really here, which for a certain period of time was actually happening quite frequently, that just in terms of our language, you would say that it's really sort of a hologram of you. And at the beginning I thought, yeah, sure, you know, whatever. But since I really saw it on film as well, that there is just this very two-dimensional quality to it. So that's interesting as well.
On my current passport, I had to have the passport photos taken twice because they took it as my body was metamorphosing. And there's no way the passport office would have thought that was me. And so I just, rather than deal with getting it sent back, I just had to wait till the morphing of the face was done and then went back again and did them. So now it's in my passport. Let's take a quick break and we'll be back.
After 3 months of intense physical preparation in January 2004, Almin experienced a transfiguration, entering the presence of the infinite for the second time since moving into God consciousness, the state of no longer identifying with the ego. In 2000, in the weeks that followed, the powerful revelations contained in this book emerged from that all-encompassing silence. Having lost most of her linear thinking during this transition, much of this book had been written without conscious thought. This form of automatic writing, like automatic speaking she now does, flows freely from source into her own handwriting from which it was transcribed. Few have entered into God consciousness to leave the bliss to teach. Still fewer enter the stage of immortal master and in addition continue to function among the masses. But as a Toltec Nagual and seer, Almin's life is dedicated to leading others to complete freedom from mortal boundaries. Journey to the Heart of God is an opportunity of a lifetime to see through the eyes of one who has encountered the indescribable realms of eternity. From such a perspective come insights that can heal the deepest wounds of alienation found in human hearts. Journey to the Heart of God contains, no matter how profound, truth. Truth that can be recognized for what it is, and it is the truth that shall set us free. Pick up a copy of The Journey to the Heart of God and discover your personal truth and freedom through Almin's books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com. A Life of Miracles is a deeply inspiring and motivational book in its content. It is unique in its field in making man's relationship as the microcosm to the macrocosm understandable to both beginning and advanced readers. It's a detailed guide to living a joyous and balanced life and provides a carefully laid out map to achieving the magnificent destiny that beckons at the apex of human experience, that of ascension. If you're ready to ascend to a higher consciousness, begin each day with A Life of Miracles or any other books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or her magazine by contacting Almin at www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Welcome back with us, Andrew here. What's your next question?
Well, you've been slightly stealing my thunder here because Lale from Paris writes the following. I have a question about mirrors. Since Sunday, I've covered all mirrors in my house, and I feel a big difference in my consciousness.
Really?
I feel more peaceful, and it seems it had restored part of my innocence and purity. Can that help if all major light workers do that?
Actually, that is a resounding yes. When, you know, I used to, before Mother called me to this work, I worked shamanically for many years, and I would take people into the mountains of Canada on the Stony Indians' Holy Land, and we'd set up teepees, and I'd cook for them 3 meals a day, and I'd teach them, but we'd bathe in the cold river, men one side, women round the bend, you know, and basically just live on that land with no mirrors, no anything. And what the difference is that makes is that the wonderful connection with the earth gets reestablished. You can feel this peace settling into the sternum area. Rogier, you were discussing yesterday and the day before a pressure in the sternum area, and that was the case because there was this this issue of tone not synchronized between the masculine and feminine, and the communication not synchronized. What the non-synchronization did is it robs innocence. When innocence is restored, you feel it in the sternum area like this deep peace that settles in there. And when it's not there, you feel it as a tension in your chest. In the past, I would take my pods and have them just sit a full day and do nothing to get the tension out of their body. And the most profound place where you feel it is in that sternum. And when you don't look in the mirror, there is this complete oneness with the moment, because a mirror makes self-reflection. When you're encumbered by the weight of self-reflection, my brothers and sisters, you do not live in the moment. So I am so glad our wonderful French Parisian master Lalay is mentioning this, because it's very, very helpful to cover all mirrors and just for weeks live without all mirrors.
So what's the relation?
Sorry?
So what's the relation between mirrors and purity and innocence then, or rather their disturbance?
It's the consequent reflection. For instance, I would have a very tough time of this because my room's architecture, geometry, perhaps that's the right word, but my sacred room in which I'm sitting right now doing this work is actually mirroring the human brain. When the human brain has the two hemispheres, I have 30 feet of mirror. And then it was done according to the very specific golden mean ratio. It's basically a replica of the tabernacle of the Jewish history. And then the mirror is the other brain. It's the brain part. So this is my bedroom. And this is a very sacred place. The geometry is meant for dimensional changes and so on. But the point I'm trying to make is I don't even see myself in the mirror anymore. It's just there. But if we look in the mirror for the sake of seeing ourselves, it's the consequent reflection, the self-reflection, that we become weighted with and lose the moment. And innocence is only found in the moment. But it's heartily recommended, and there's another one that goes with it. Two more practices that we can throw in here, because they're also extremely valuable. And if you did all those three together, especially some folks have Christmas vacation, so it would be ideal time. Because a week of this, oh my goodness, big difference. The next one is to cover your clocks. Now, what I would do, you know, if you have to go to work, you go with an alarm clock. You set your alarm at a specific time. You just simply switch the alarm off. You don't even look at the clock again, and you get to work. You finish work. You'll know when everybody's leaving the office that it's time to go home. But at night, you just switch the alarm clock on again. if you have somebody that can remind you of appointments, that's very valuable. Otherwise, timers work better. But when you get rid of all clocks, my house is full of the most beautiful clocks because I used to collect antique clocks for a long time. We've got a beautiful grandfather clock that was done in the Schwarzwald in Germany. It still has its original workings in it and so on. Hasn't worked in years because Mother told me one day, stop it. Just stop that clock's pendulum. I've got beautiful French clocks and things. They're stopped. They don't work. I have one alarm clock that I work according to. And as little as possible, if you can go days without looking at a clock, so much better. Now let's look at the third practice. The third one, and it will bring enormous peace to you because it puts you back in the moment. The next one would be, and by the way, I would heartily recommend that you eliminate as many noises in your house as you can, because those also, the master Paul Downs from Amsterdam, is for instance a very good example. He has taken all noise that he can out of his home, and the freezer is usually a big offender. You know, so I don't know what you can do about that. One of the ways is you can put it in your garage, where you don't have to hear it. But the use of electric light. If you simply end your day when it's dark and when you feel like sleeping, and if you wake up when the light comes up, now that excludes if you have to go to offices and things, you use that alarm clock. But if you use non-electric light, just use your candle if you want to. You know, use a little oil lamp if you want to. But the non-electric light, the absence of that, is phenomenal. There's a great peace that comes. Then there is the ultimate. And the wonderful master Emily from Amsterdam, this for a full week, pursuant to my advice, you simply, for 1 week, do nothing other than essential things, such as you stock up with food, you disconnect your fax, you disconnect any contact with the outside world, you don't watch movies. Here and there you can listen to some gentle music, but personally I listened to no music because I wanted to overcome any inkling of the fear of silence. And my brothers and sisters, when your mind is already silent and you do this, it's so wonderfully still. If your mind isn't silenced, this is a wonderful way to try and do it. So if for 1 week you do nothing, initially, because many of us have lived on in such a way that the go and on switch is on all the time, so initially you may just want to keep sleeping. That's okay too. You sleep when you're tired. You wake up when you're not. And then you sleep again and you eat when you're hungry. But you simply, you just are with yourself. When there's a thought that comes up, you look at it like you would in meditation, but you don't engage it. It says, I wonder if my son is going to try and call this week or something, right? You just watch it come and you watch it go. You don't answer it. You don't engage it. You don't run with it. The same as you would do in meditation. This is different, though, from meditation. This is called being in eternal time. And even 2 days of it, with no electricity, no noise of any kind that you can help, and no mirrors, would be phenomenally helpful. So you can do it on your weekends. Rohir, let's take a quick break, and we'll be back after these messages.
Almeen continues the exploration begun in her previous books, A Life of Miracles and Journey to the Heart of God, probing further into the nature and meaning of existence. Secrets of the Hidden Realms introduces the readers to the goddess mysteries as they apply not only to individual human lives, but to the cycles of the cosmos. From this background in the intangible functions of being, Almeen is led into the dimensions of non-humans, interacting with creatures previously known only in myth and folklore, the inner relationships of fairies, dragons, gnomes, unicorns, and other elementals, and their influence on humankind is explained. Vivid accounts of encounters with these beings and others existing as expressions of the widely divergent vibrations illustrate the essential unity of all creation. Journeying from these subtle realms, the reader is shown the ultimate expression of humanity, evolution into God-being. Secret of the Hidden Realms can be obtained from Almeen, along with her other books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com. In this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almeen's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power of Elvispada, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes old barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almeen's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Well, we're now in our final quarter of our show, and thank you for being with us, my brothers and sisters. It makes a big difference. And also, for those of you that have never been with us when we give you this show live, which is during our pre-records, the way to do that, actually, is to sign up on Twitter or just to go to my page on Twitter, because we tell you when those pre-records happen. And it's nice, because then you can type into Twitter and you could get your 2 cents worth in on the show, and I'll do my very best to answer it. Rohir, what other questions?
Well, the other day, or the latest report really, is now that you said that matter is all there is, and I do believe that in itself is a topic maybe worth elaborating on a little bit. But I think in one of the previous recordings we did, you also said that effectively that meant there is no soul, which of course is also nice to sort of elaborate on a little bit. But I was actually specifically, the question that's been raised is what this means for, you know, this so-called life after death.
Very good point. Yes, exactly. During the first week of October 2008, some extraordinary changes were made, and if people go to those dates in the blog, they can read about them very carefully. But one of the things that was eliminated was birth. And you know, Casey wrote way back in his prophecies, which were very, very accurate at the time, except that with the ascension, all those prophecies have been changed very dramatically. But he did say that the time would come, you know, when there are not children being born. And I think he said it would skip a generation or something. But it's permanent. There's going to come a time once the spirit world empties itself out that we are going into a deathless society. If souls are not recycling through the spirit world, and obviously babies need to be born while there are spirits there that need to come back, but the recycling of souls through the spirit world requires two things. It requires death, and it requires birth. And one of the things that the mother had to remember is that we are not technically her children. We are her creations. And she had to get that straight. She had to fully understand that. So then, this issue of motherhood as a necessity to create life or to have life around you became obsolete during that same week that she got that recognition in waking up from the dream. And now, without death and no birth, we will all be in eternal youthfulness as adults. The multiple changes that have been made to the human body, you know, bones are actually not a reality out of the dream. It was inside the dream because we use structure such as matrices to be the bones of the cosmos. Now we no longer need them. Bodies are turning into light. And as light bodies, we don't need fluids. We don't need blood. We don't need structure. We don't need many of those things. So we're turning into light beings where there is no death and there is no birth. It is absolutely so that there is no longer a need for death for multiple reasons. We speak about why death as a reality ceased to exist in great detail. It is actually a fascinating read, and it's in The Ring of Truth, one of my books. I started saying that after one of the magazines quoted somebody else's book by the same name, but that book's name was given to me by the mother, and it took me a long time to actually understand what she meant by it. But The Ring of Truth speaks about how we had what's called the tumbler by the Toltec Nahuals, which was a rolling force of awareness, and that when it shattered, it no longer rolled, and so it no longer caused wear and tear on what we had then as a luminous cocoon, which ultimately caused death. So the movement of awareness was the first thing in the dream that had to stop. That was the one cause of death. The other cause of death is that we've had an etheric part to us. Etheric part of matter is very much so, unless you're dealing with the holy, incorruptible matter that is the infinite being. That is what the infinite is made of. Everything we see and touch and are, the chair we sit on, the candle in front of us, the food we eat, all of it is the same substance. One atomic element, incorruptible. Now, all those things, like the soul force, the life force, the awareness particles, the power, the energy, the frequency, the light. We had light bodies before. Gone. All of those things have come into the physical. It's in combination. It's like there were seven building blocks of life representing the seven colors. When those colors pull in together, we have the white light. We are living in the infinite beingness in white light. And so, no, there is no more soul. There is no more dream-body separation. The dream is like an imagining, but the dream body doesn't actually physically leave. For mystics, it's a whole different ballgame.
Okay, but so what happens when someone dies then, even though it doesn't exist anymore?
They are actually doing two things. Technically, because the mother has said that they cannot force death, they can simulate death. Let's take a look at another example, and then I'll explain what I mean by that. We have about 4 minutes here before we close. There is no real disease. The disease of the cosmos was duality and polarity. It has ended. There is no more disease. So why then are we feeling aches and pains and colds and this and that? Because we simulate it as though it's there. It's like a hologram. If you looked at the old Star Trek movies of Deep Space Nine, I don't know if they have them anymore because I don't actually get television, but when they had Deep Space Nine, what you ended up with was a a holodeck that would simulate streams and mountain climbing and things, so that those who were trapped on a ship for their life, in some instances, or for decades, could have access to nature, even though it wasn't real nature. It was simulated. It was called a holodeck. You go into the room, you pop in the program, and there's your program. It's a program we popped into the computer of ourselves, simulating disease. Death can be simulated in that the incorruptible matter could still move because of belief systems, could still move itself into the spirit world, which is now among us. It's among us. We're just not accustomed to seeing it. So like Magellan's ships by the Indians could not be seen, we're not seeing that the dead are among us. And so, you know, they move out of our sight. And who knows, maybe some of the people we see in the store are not really alive. Maybe they are dead. Maybe we are seeing it. But they're moving out into the other realm. The body that's left behind, that's the illusion.
But
previously,
I mean,
bodies were
them,
left behind. Pardon?
If we're seeing them, then they would have to have matter, wouldn't they?
Not necessarily. We're seeing a sky that isn't real at all.
Okay, but if matter is all there is.
Mm-hmm. Yes, matter is all there is, but there is still this issue of our belief systems keeping stuff in place. And we will see the sky and swear it's real.
Okay, but when you talk about simulation of death, usually, and then in the holodeck, for example, in Star Trek, usually the person is aware that they're initiating some kind of simulation, but in the case of death or the simulation of death, that would seem far from the case because the person would actually see themselves as dying.
Yes, they would. Exactly.
And they would be dying in the sense that the body would sort of go into the ground or, you know, burnt or whatever.
Well, my point is that's not really a body that's left. It's like a hologram. Previously, it was a body. Now it isn't. That's the point I'm trying to make.
Okay, but where is
the real part
going
is the
then?
One that, well, really nowhere, except in their belief system, they're separating from us, and it's because the spirit world has moved into the physical. So it's living like in a separate reality created by himself or herself.
Yeah, I would get all that, but I don't know what that would mean now that everything is kind of inherently intertwined with matter. What the idea of the spirit world even means.
Pardon?
What it even means, the spirit world.
Okay, the spirit world is like the fairy realms or the angel realms. There's only one reality right now. But if we don't believe that we can see them, we don't. They are seeing each other, mind you, but it's just humans that have had this peculiarity of taking life at face value and having belief systems keep things in place for themselves like a movie. You know, I so wish we could talk more about this, but we've come to the end of our program, and please write the questions down, and we'll tackle that one next week, Rogier, because it's very valid questions. And I feel like I'm just scratching the surface, you know, and that I've left things hanging, but it's the best I can do. And we'll be back with you again next week.
We hope you've enjoyed today's show, Windows into Eternity with Al Mee. Please join us again next week. Thank you.